Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, we've got an important show for you today. When veteran combat surgeon and practicing neurosurgeon Dr. Lee Warren got a look at an MRI, he saw a form of brain cancer that they call the supervillain, and his heart sank, and he thought to himself about this patient, well, I've just seen the end of you. Well, it wasn't until this brilliant doctor walked through a tragic loss of his own that he realized that this particular form of brain cancer is not the deadliest disease. Hopelessness is. So here's the question. How do you live in the tension of such profound suffering with the promise of hope? Because Scripture calls us to a hope that does not disappoint. Well, Dr. Lee Warren joins me today to talk about his raw and insightful book, I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know. I'm so happy to tell you we've got 8 copies to give away, thanks to Waterbrook, 8 copies of this hardcover book. So that means some copies will be going to our live audience, some will be going to our podcast listeners. I'm thrilled about that. If you're new to the Faith Radio audience, let me tell you how to do it. You just text the word book to 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. It'll kick back a link. It just takes you a moment to enter the drawing. We're giving away resources every single day, and it's our pleasure to do that. We'll get Dr. Warren on in just a moment. Quick announcement. We're almost to the end of February here, but every week during the month of February, we're giving away one copy of Dr. Tony Evans' study Bible. It is a weighty thing. And if you know anything about Dr. Tony Evans, nothing he says is fluff. And these Bibles are beautiful. You can register to win on our website at myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Lee Warren is a brain surgeon, inventor, Iraq War veteran, and a writer. His book, No Place to Hide, was named the 2015 U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff's professional reading list. Dr. Warren has appeared on major media outlets. He plays guitar, loves to make connections between faith and science, which is one of my favorite things too, and the realities of life. Dr. Warren lives in Wyoming with his wife, Lisa. We're so honored to have him with us today. Dr. Warren, welcome to the program.
Hey, Susie, thanks. It's great to be with you today.
Looking forward to this conversation, and we love to start every day talking Scripture. I'm wondering if there's a verse you've been pondering these days you can share with us.
You know, there's two. From Old Testament, having gone through the loss of a child, the promise of Psalm 34:18, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. I can just vouch for that. He is there when you're hurting. And from the New Testament, relative to this book, because it's really all about hope, is Romans 12:12. I love it in the Voice translation where it says, do not forget to rejoice, for hope is always just around the corner.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Well, let's start with just give some backstory. Give us, just tell us your journey, if you would.
Okay. So, like you said, I'm a neurosurgeon. I spent some time in the Iraq War. My wife Lisa and I mostly raised our kids in the Deep South in Auburn, Alabama. And as I went through my career, there was just one disease that kept thwarting me as a surgeon, and it's this brain tumor called glioblastoma. GBM, glioblastoma, is almost 100% fatal. The 5-year survival rate is less than 10%. 10-year survival is essentially zero, and the average survival is only about 12 months. So when you encounter this tumor, like if you've got some experience with it, I just would see in my mind what was going to happen. Like I felt like I knew the outcome before I knew the patient, even once I saw the scan. And I would say that, you know, I've seen the end of this person. I know what the biopsy is going to look like. I can hear the conversation I'm going to have with the patient's family. I can see when you're going to have chemo and radiation and when you're going to lose weight and when you're going to hospice. And I just knew it. I knew what was going to happen. And so at the same time, as a scientist, I knew, but as a Christian, I'm supposed to believe, and the Bible tells me to, the Bible tells me to have faith and to pray without ceasing, and that the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and all those things, and I'm supposed to pray and believe. So I had things that I believed on one hand and things that I knew on the other, and there was this great chasm in between that I had to learn how to deal with.
Wow. And talking about expressing it from your vantage point, your perspective, my brother-in-law died of pancreatic cancer, and it was one of those things as well. Thank you. But you hear that diagnosis as well. Yeah. I mean, it's so devastating. And I'm a woman of faith, and yet there's something in me that knew he wasn't going to survive this. So you kind of were trying to wrestle in this tension. And your wife, I think it was, who suggested you reach out to Philip Yancey. You wrote him a letter, sure, not expecting to hear back from him. Tell us what you wrote, what questions you asked, and maybe what his reply was, and if it surprised you.
Sure. So I grew up in kind of a fundamentalist tradition where grace wasn't really, it was more legalism. And So I had to learn as an adult when rules stopped working and didn't help me with my faith, I had to learn about grace. And I learned about grace from Philip Yancey's book, particularly the What's So Amazing About Grace and The Jesus I Never Knew. Those two books sort of transformed me and I think saved me as a Christian. And so later, after I'd read all of his books and his work with Philip, with Dr. Brand and all the medical stuff he'd written, when I really encountered a problem in my faith, I would turn to something that Philip had written. So when Lisa said, you're struggling with this idea, it's really affecting you in your practice, and you're having trouble grappling with faith and knowledge and doubt and all these things, why don't you write Philip Yancey? And I was like, he's never going to write me back. So I found an email address through his publisher, and I wrote this email and asked the question. It just sort of felt better for writing it. And then a while later, he actually wrote me back and started this great conversation. And his answer really was, when he has trouble grappling with something, he journals and writes about it. And sometimes that turns into books. And so I wanted an easy answer, of course. Yeah. I wanted him to say, here's how you handle it. But he basically suggested that I write about it. And that's sort of where this book came from.
Hmm. Well, as you started to seek God as a believer and a surgeon, how did he minister to you? What did he speak to you? This is so tricky because we do know there are documented cases of miracles. And I know you're someone who believes in miracles, and you have patients who would say, I'm going to be the one to beat it.
Yep.
And with this particular tumor, I don't know that you've seen that. You can maybe speak to that if you would. But how have you learned to navigate and live in that tension of going, I believe in a God of miracles, but I know what I've seen. How do you do that?
Well, so the first thing that I started doing is when I realized if I couldn't doctor you to survival in your physical body, if the skills that I have as a surgeon can't save your body, then I still need to have a way to doctor you. And what I started learning was it really matters. It matters a lot how much hope and faith we hold on to when we're encountering hard things in our lives, which really was transformative to me later. But it really matters. And we know from neuroscience, for example, and we know from research that people who fight and hope, they do better even if they don't live longer. Their families stay together. Their marriages do better. They spend less time in the hospital. They have lower pain scores. They have fewer infections. So people that believe and hope and fight, no matter what, they have better outcomes. And so I started noticing this sort of dichotomy, this separation between circumstance and your emotional state, if you want to call that. If you're not a believer, you might say emotional state of mind. If you're a believer, you might say your level of faith or hope. But there's a real important understanding that holding on to hope despite hard circumstance makes your life better,
yeah,
no matter what happens with your body. And so I started trying to understand how to help people find those places to land on when the things they thought they knew, I think I'm going to live a long time. I don't think I'll ever get cancer. I don't think my body will ever fail me. Those things we all believe. When those things that you think you know are taken away from you, that's when your hope and faith can plummet. And so I started trying to find the things that help people land on hope separate and apart from their diagnosis or their prognosis.
Such a profound insight. And I think about, forgive me, friends, if you've heard me say this before, but this was one of those insights from my mentor over a decade ago that I still return to. And I've battled some chronic health issues, and I've said over and over again, I just know when I err on the side of faith, I feel better, I fight better, I do better. And so until my last dying breath, I'm erring on the side of faith. But oftentimes you hear people who say, I tried that, it didn't work. And I think what they're saying they tried is an expected outcome. And what my mentor said is, Susie, years ago, she said, you've got to discern the difference between expectation and expectancy. She said, expectation is premeditated disappointment. You're creating a bullseye, telling God he's bound to perform on that bullseye, but he doesn't live by our dictates. We live by his. And so she said, those people who pray, create an outcome, and then get offended with God and don't pray at all, that's a problem. But she said, expectancy is putting it all on the table, saying, there's a mystery to you, Lord. You're going to answer probably in a way I don't expect, but I'm going to live with open-handed expectancy. You're involved somehow. I mean, to me, that opens up your soul, that opens up your cells, that opens up your heart and your eyes, wouldn't you say?
Exactly right. You know, it's exactly right. That your ability to trust that God is going to make your life as good as it can be, but understanding that there's going to be an end to it. That God can minister and nurture you and carry you through hard things. And I think I'm going to misquote him, but I think it was Augustine that said, you know, it might be that answered prayers are just coincidences, but I have a whole lot more coincidences when I pray. And that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we're going to pause here. When we come back, I want us to have you give us a little bit more of your backstory, just a little bit of your journey. Tell us about your kids, if you're comfortable with some of the loss that you've encountered and how that's impacted you. Talking to Dr. Lee Warren, and his book is titled I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know. I loaned my copy to a friend, and she said, I can't put this book down. She goes, you've got to get this guy on the show. And here we are. We have him today. We've got 8 copies to give away, thanks to his wonderful publisher. This is a hardcover book, and it reads really like a novel in so many ways. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. Text the word book. If you've got questions, send those in a separate text, and we will be back in a moment. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Dr. Lee Warren, who's written the book, I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know. Profound book, and we've got 8 copies to give away. I'm thrilled about that. So that means the copies we're going to go to some of our live listeners and some of our podcast listeners. So text the word book if you're interested, 877-933-2484. So before the break, Dr. Warren, we were talking about, as a brain surgeon, a neurosurgeon, you see some of these tumors. Once you get a look at the scan, you said to yourself, thus the title, I've seen the end of you. I know how this is going to play out. As a believer, you wrestled with, how am I supposed to do this? This thing is fatal. Pretty much 100% of the time, where does faith matter? I mean, where does prayer take place? But you started to see that it matters a whole lot in the journey and the process. But this context was kind of broadened for you when you experienced some personal loss of your own. As much as you're comfortable, would you share that part of your story with us?
Sure. You know, like I said, I was studying these people and how to help them. And I was, you know, even thinking about writing a book about how to help people when they're going through hard times. And in 2013, right around the time that this book was being born, we have 5 children. Our 19-year-old son was killed in a really horrible way, and suddenly lost our boy. And you know, he was gone. And the hardest part for us was, as a family of believers who tries to do everything right, you know, we had this traumatic event where our son dies, and he and his best friend were both killed in the house, and the cops never could satisfactorily explain to us what happened. So we were given this this great loss with no ability to understand it or answer the questions surrounding it. So, you know, for me being a it might surprise you to know that neurosurgeons are sort of control freaks. You know, we like to control stuff with our hands, and here I was given this thing that I can't investigate. I can't know more about. I can't ever understand. And so I went from being an observer of other people's troubles and a guy who was trying to write a book to help other people to being with my wife, you know, thrust into Isaiah, what Isaiah called the furnace of suffering, right? The worst place you can be as a parent is to be standing at your son's grave. And we just couldn't understand it. So I had, you know, a lot of times when we go through hard things, there's something we can attach to it that gives us some closure. You know, Uncle Uncle Joe dies of lung cancer and he smokes 4 packs a day. You can wrap your head around why that happened, right? But when your son is killed and the police can't explain that and you can't understand it, there's no way to process that. So I was stuck in this really bad spot, Susie, because as a believer and as a neurosurgeon and neuroscientist, I absolutely believe in God because I've seen the design of the human nervous system. And every time our technology allows us to look deeper in the body, it's more organized and more beautifully and more fearfully and wonderfully made. And there's just no way as a person of integrity that I could stop believing in God. But when your kid dies, you want to stop believing in God. You want to say, I don't believe that a good God could do that. So I was stuck believing in a God that I didn't like. I didn't understand why he would let something like that happen. So we started, obviously reeling, and it was a devastating time for us. And to make it worse, 3 days after he died, on the day we buried my son, our oldest daughter had our first granddaughter in San Antonio. So we went from this place where we were all excited to be there for her, where she couldn't be there with us while we were burying her brother. And we couldn't be there to see the grandbaby being born. And, it was just a devastating time for us. So how do you – here I'm trying to explain to other people how they can find their faith again. Wow. Bad things happen. And I'm trying to do it for myself. And so what we found was God keeps his promises. I had to say, okay, I know that there really is a God because you can't accidentally have this kind of a nervous system. This can't come through random chance. So I know God is real. And so if the Bible's true, if the two statements in the Bible were, first, it's impossible for God to lie, and second, all scripture is God-breathed and useful, then that means that promise that there's going to be a resurrection and I'm going to get to see my son again someday has to also be true.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to get out of bed and put my feet on the ground and start moving forward in my life again, that had to be true. And so then I started looking for other promises that were true. Psalm 34:18 was one of them. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. And that would happen in ways that were little bits of grace at first. I would get up in the morning and somehow have the energy to get to the kitchen and open up my computer, and the email would be there from our friend Max Licato or from Philip Yancey or from somebody that we loved that would just be just the right word for that moment. And as it turned out, Max was our old pastor, and he wrote a book that came out right around the time that Mitch died called You'll Get Through This.
I've had him on the show to talk about that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Max sent me a signed copy of that just a few days after Mitch died. And Philip's book about, the hard parts of grace, understanding the big questions, came out right around that time. And he sent us a copy. And it was just like God was just putting all this stuff in our life right at the right time to help us get through it. And then as it turned out, we ran our own practice. My wife, Lisa, ran our practice. We had 10 employees. And it was a fact of life that we were going to lose our business if we didn't go back to work a few weeks after our son died, which seemed impossible. And our youngest child, Kaylin, was a junior in high school at the time, and she had to go back to school. And there was this one moment where I walked into the living room and Kaylin was standing there. She was looking at a picture of her brother, and she was going back to school. And she said to her brother's picture, she said, "Mitch, I will never be able to move on with my life, but I have to carry on with it.
Wow.
I've got to go back to school." And that simple phrase from that child kind of became our little mantra for a while. We've got to carry on. Mitch would want us to carry on. We can't move on. And then around the same time, a surgeon friend of mine, he said, "Your son would not want one death to cause a 200% mortality rate. He doesn't want you to die also. You've got to live, and you got to make his life mean something." And so we started just moving forward a little. God just gave us the propulsion, the little bit of grace each day to move forward. And we couldn't see the light yet, Susie, but we started believing that there still was light out there again. And we started believing that someday we would see the light. And that was enough for another day. And just day by day, the Lord was close to us in our brokenheartedness, and he started moving us forward. And it started feeling like we were going to make it, and that's what I can tell people who are grieving, like don't give up, just keep moving a little bit, and it won't feel very good for a while, but over time it'll start becoming possible again, and you'll start believing again. The light will start shining again. And what we found is God started putting people in our lives who were closer to their trauma than we were to ours. And how, and we were in a position where we could help them just by saying, look, man, I'm still breathing. You will be too 6 months from now. And that started being helpful to people. And we started seeing value in just being able to minister to other people. And that's when I started, you know, blogging and podcasting and all those things and just trying to reach out and connect with other people who are going through hard things. And it just turned into something that was ministering to us as much as we were ministering to other people. And that's how we survived it. And really, that's where this book came from.
You know, we give comfort with the comfort we've received, and something heals in us as we minister to the healings of others. And what I'm just struck by as I'm listening to you, we just have a couple minutes to our hard break at the bottom of the hour, but what I'm so struck by is I see a fork in the road in this story, Dr. Warren, because if just to give a quick more context for our listeners, Mitch had kind of wandered and had gotten messed up with some friends, and you guys reached out to him every day. You texted him, told him you how much you loved him, and he was hard to reach. And then finally, you get a call, Dad, I'm coming home, and you guys talk together, and he told you how much he loved you, and you had a breakthrough, and you had every reason to think, he's coming home, we're starting again. And then all of a sudden you get this jarring, wretched call that he's gone. And what you write here is you said, for me, it was harder to face my son's death with faith because it felt like the whole thing was a dirty trick by God. After months of trying with all of our might to reconnect with Mitch, he called and we talked and everything seemed as if it were going to be okay right up to the moment that it wasn't. And in that same time, people were saying things to you like God must have needed him more than you did. And people, I know they mean well, but sometimes it's better to be quiet. But they say these things to you that are just so devastating. Yeah. And this is the fork in the road that I'm seeing right here is you could have picked up an offense and stayed with the offense, but somehow, some way, God allowed you to have a tenderness in your heart, Dr. Warren, where you chose to go, okay, but these are some of the blessings. Max Lucado sent me a note. Philip Yancey sent me a note. A friend sent me a verse. Just got about a minute to our break at the bottom, but I want you to say a word about the choice, really, to choose hope, because you had something to do with that, you know?
Yeah, you know, hopelessness is deadlier than cancer, and if you choose to dwell in it, you will surely die. Even if you survive the thing that's killing you, your life will be dead. And if you choose hope, if you choose to let the light back in, then you'll live no matter what happens to your body. And that's the choice we had to make. Do I want to sit in this and dwell in it in sackcloth and ashes and just let it kill me? Or do I want to try to make Mitch's life mean something and therefore redeem those years and the loss that we faced and make something good come out of it if it's possible? Hmm. And you can't see it at the time, but you have to choose it.
Wow. When we come back, I want you to say a little bit about the stages of grief, Dr. Warren. You know, and I want to be so careful. As someone who's lost people close to me, I know grief looks different on all of us, but I feel like you've made a really good point that there are times when grief almost leads to death, where you see someone years later and they're still in such a dark place that it's a scary dark place. And there's others who find reason for hope. And I love what your daughter said. What'd she say? I can't move on, but I'm going to carry on. What a distinction that is. Well, when we come back, love you to talk about that. We've got 8 copies of I've Seen the End of You. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to neurosurgeon Dr. Lee Warren. His book is titled I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know. And Dr. Warren, when he sees a certain scan of a certain kind of tumor, he knows how it's going to play out. And he wrestled with, I'm a man of faith and I'm a man of science, but I see how this goes time and time again. So what is faith supposed to look like? And he was sitting in the chapel after one of his favorite patients had passed who fought such a good fight. And Pastor John, a friend, joined him in the chapel. And as Dr. Warren just wrestled, Pastor John said this to him, I think I know what your problem is. You think your prayers are valid only if the outcome is what you want. Like it only counts if you get what you ask for. But he said more than that. He said, really, what about the journey? What if you bring faith to the journey? And Dr. Warren then walked through a incredible loss of his son. And as he said, he was first writing this book to bring hope for people through situations he observes, and then he went into a place of hopelessness himself, and he's emerged out the other side, you know, even stronger and wiser, because how do you ever bury your child? But love for you, Dr. Warren, to speak to the whole idea of the stages of grief. On one hand, it looks different on each of us, but there is a place of grief that really does lead to just a death of your soul and your cells and everything about you.
It does. You know, the original stages of grief concept, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, was written to help us understand how people respond internally to the news that they're dying, right? So that's where it's defined, and we've kind of broadened it to any type of hard thing that we go through. But what I've learned is that I think when you lose someone, it's a different process than when you're dying yourself or when you're going through terminal illness. And the one thing that I experienced and I tried to articulate is that people shouldn't expect it, Susie, to be a linear process where you're going to go into denial and you're going to get mad and you're going to try to argue, negotiate, and then you're going to, you know, be depressed, and then you're finally going to accept it. It doesn't work out easily like that. It actually is a kind of a labyrinth where you find yourself in one stage and back in another. And the problem with moving forward is that we have an enemy, right? We have Christians believe it's literally Satan who wants us to not succeed in regaining the joy and abundance in our life. And so what happens in great loss is you are greatly tempted to sit down and let it kill you. Mm-hmm. And when I lost my son, you know, I didn't have it in me, I didn't think. And Lisa and I certainly together didn't think at first that we had it in us to get back on our feet and continue helping our youngest child go through high school and you know, work on our marriage and save our business and all those things. It seemed impossible because all you want to do is sit and let the grief pour over you and let the pain melt you down. And the enemy is in your ear saying, you'll never get over this. You will never recover this. God doesn't love you anymore. He might not even be real. Hmm. You know, that's what you're hearing in your head and your heart when you're hurting. But God is, you know, grief is not a gentleman, but God is. And God will patiently sit with you, and he will gently remind you that he's still there, and he will hold you as close as you'll let him, and over time he will minister to you, and you will start to believe again that the light will be there, and then eventually you'll begin to see the light. And what it takes, though, is this commitment that you're not going to let this particular circumstance kill you. You're not going to let this particular circumstance kill your heart. And so for us, it was, we got too much in our lives that Mitch would want us to continue. He would want us to go and develop a relationship with our new granddaughter that was born. He would want us to help his sister get through high school. He wouldn't want to see us lose our business. You know, none of those things would honor him. And so God was faithful to help us hear those thoughts too, competing with those of the enemy telling us to give up. And so I think from a stages standpoint, if you can just understand that grief does evolve over time, that the phase you're in right now is not permanent, that's what keeps you from picking up a bottle or a handgun or something else when you don't think there's any hope. Hmm. Just understand that there is a future that will change. The feeling you have right now is not what's permanent. The loss is permanent. Like, your son's not coming back. Sometimes that tumor's not going away. But the emotional feeling that you're having right now is not permanent, and there can be joy again someday, but only if you're alive to see it.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the passage, without a vision, people perish. Without a vision, people cast off all self-restraint. If there's no sense, nothing on the horizon, it doesn't seem to be a motivator to say no to to destructive things in my present. And I love the idea of, for the sake of the person that you've lost, what would they want? You know, they would want on the horizon for you to steward your business. They would want you to love your other kids. And it seems really important to have something on the horizon to keep you rising up and getting out of bed every day. Wow. Wow. What was not helpful? I just think it's a good equipping conversation to have. I mean, there are things, you know, when I battled Lyme disease, I cannot tell you how many people told me I wouldn't be sick if I had more faith. And if I was fighting girl, I would have taken him down right there. I'm telling you what. But it's like, I don't get it. But tell me some of the things people said and why they weren't so helpful.
So somewhere in Christian education, I think there must be a handbook that we're all instructed in of cliches that we're supposed to say. I don't know where, I don't remember the book, but there must be, because we all say the same things. Mm. He's in a better place now. God works everything out for good. God must have needed him more than you did. All these kinds of things. And what I can tell you is I've said them many times, as all of us probably have, but when you're in the receiving end, they do not help. It is not helpful for somebody to tell you that your son's death will work out for good for you. Mm-hmm. It may be true. I mean, the promise of God is true, and I can give you some concrete examples in a moment of how those are true. But in the moment, what you need is somebody to put their hand on your shoulder and say, I'm really sorry. I'm praying for you. I don't understand the pain that you must be in, but I'm here for you. Those kinds of things were the most helpful. I mean, we had people, my sister from Minneapolis and her husband, they came and just sat with us, and they didn't say a whole lot. They were just there, and that was more ministering to us than all of the cliches, right? People who noticed that we needed paper towels and paper plates and toilet paper and went and took care of it for us, those were much more helpful than hearing that, God was going to work this out for good. So the things we do and the presence is much more powerful than the palliative statements that we try to make. And I think that, like you said, you're not a fighting girl. I'm a really gentle person, too. But the closest I ever came to punching a person in my adult life was at my son's memorial service. This guy who was from the same faith background that I was, fundamentalist kind of tradition, having heard some of the circumstances around Mitch's death, he said, Lee, I just want you to take comfort. I know Mitch knew the Lord, and I bet you he repented right before he died, and I'm sure he's in heaven. I'm sure of it. And I just wanted to kill him. That's something that doesn't bring comfort to people. But we're trying. I mean, we're trying to bring comfort in those moments. But what we really need to do is bring presence. Just not with a T, but with a C. Yeah. Presence. We sit down and love on people and hush our mouths. And I just had a hospital chaplain on my podcast, and it's exactly what he said. Show up and shut up and hang out. That's the best thing you can do.
That is good. Show up, shut up, and hang out. And I just wanted to get to the bottom of, I wonder why we do that. Why do we need to tie it up in a bow? Why do we have to be the person to try to deliver some spiritual capsule? I'd love to know what's behind that. Maybe there's times where we think we're helping, but I think it'd be really good to understand what motivates me, because I really don't need answers, because I don't have them. You don't explain why someone loses a child. There are no answers for that,
That's right.
Have mercy.
There's not, Exactly. Have mercy, because we all need it. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how you find yourself doing that even when you know you're not supposed to. You just can't stop running your mouth. But I think the thing is, when he says my grace is sufficient for you, we need to sometimes let ourselves be the grace that he's trying to deliver to somebody else, and not our words, but just our presence.
Oh, very good. You said most of us, probably all of us, if we're honest, approach life expecting everything to be good all the time. And then when life is difficult and bad things happen, we wonder where God is. We doubt our faith. We abandon it all together. We pray for one thing, we get another, and we respond by deciding that God can't be real because he's not behaving the way we want him to. And that really is true. And I feel like to break through to a new level of depth with the Lord and a confidence in his character, we have to all go through things where he doesn't give us what we want, because he is God and we are not. As you've, emerged out of this grief, talk about your theology. Talk about your relationship with the Lord and how you show up with God each day after what you've been through.
Well, I think that the thing this has done for me more than anything else is just show that God is true to his word. And the best example I can give to that, is that Romans 8:28. It's a terrible thing to say to somebody when they're hurting, but it's proven true. God works all things together for good for those that love him and are called according to his purpose to make them conform to Christ. That's the promise. We misuse it to say God's going to make this good. But what I've learned is when I started writing my newsletter, for example, I write a little newsletter that goes all over the world every Sunday, and I've had two people that have written into me over the years that have said they were going to commit suicide, but something I said that day out of my pain kept them from killing themselves. Mm. And so I've seen two examples of how losing Mitch equipped me to use that story to help other people that saved lives. And so that's a good thing, right? Losing your son is not a good thing, but those people being alive is a good thing. So God is this quantum God who can be two things at once. It's not either or, it's yes and. And so, you know, it's bad to lose your son, but God can make something good out of it, and that makes it redeemable. If it wasn't redeemable, we couldn't survive it. We couldn't process it. We couldn't tolerate it. But the fact that God can turn our ashes into joy, turn our mourning into dancing, that means that if you hang in there and press through, he will be faithful to do those things for you and make something happen out of your pain that is valuable to the kingdom and to you.
When I was walking through my physical battle with this Lyme disease as a young mom, and I'm so sick, and we were going broke because of medical debt, and I had a Christian leader come up to me and say to me, he said, "I personally don't have any problems, but I can see that you have lots of them. So if you ever want to talk," and I'm like, "If I did, I wouldn't probably talk to you." Eventually, he did fall into quite a bit of trouble because he take heed if you think you stand, if you know what I mean. But I, you know, you weren't coming at it, and now you're a neurosurgeon. You're working on people who are dying, but you were somebody who'd walked through hardship, but nothing like this until you lost your son. So I wonder, as a doctor and a neurosurgeon, you're in the thick of it with families who are 1 minute looking for a shred of hope from you, and the next minute probably yelling at you because they hate what you have to say. How has your experience impacted how you show up as a neurosurgeon?
It's impacted a lot. You know, the biggest impact is this crystal clear understanding that oftentimes the surgery I can perform, the medicine I can prescribe, are not the best things I can do for my patient. Like sometimes I can do a great operation, but I can do something better for you if I can help you latch on to hope or rekindle your faith or believe that prayer matters, or you know, if I can help you see that this circumstance is not defining of you, even if it defines the limits of your lifetime. Like I've helped people understand that none of us get to choose the number of our days, but we can certainly choose the quality of them. We can certainly choose the character of them. And I help people now understand that their life should be viewed as a story. You know, if you want to think about how your kids are going to look back on your life, do you want them to just list a bunch of stuff that happened to you? Or do you want them to list the tale of how you grew and changed and overcame problems and the way that you were defined by the way that you responded to the challenges your life came and brought to you? So I think helping people understand those things, Susie, is a whole different level of physicianship than I ever had before I lost
my son. Anybody who has you as a doctor, Dr. Warren, they're blessed indeed. We're going to pause here for our last break, talking to Dr. Lee Warren. His book is titled, "I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know." It's honest, and it's raw. It reads like a novel. We've got 8 copies of this hardcover book. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing. Here's the number, 877-933-2484. When we come back, Doc, I would love for you to share a story of someone who defied the odds, someone you thought, this is surely more where this is going because I've seen the end of you, and maybe they surprised you. I would love to know. You got a minute here to think about that story. I'm putting him on the spot, but he's a doctor. He's a neurosurgeon. He can do this, right? So we'll talk to Dr. Warren Moore in just a moment. Conversation with Dr. Lee Warren. His book is titled, "I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know." It's a hardcover book, and he talks about just some of these devastating diagnoses and how, as a man of faith and a man of science, he's wrestled in the tension of belief and the actuality of some of these diseases and where they're going. And then Dr. Lee, as he's really navigating some of these hard conversations and questions with his friend, Philip Yancey, by the way. Dr. Warren lost his own son tragically, and it changed the conversation, or at least brought it to a whole new place of depth. And Dr. Warren says, "I'm a firm believer in God's desire and ability to heal, to repair, to make things right when all the doctors believe there's no hope. I've seen far too many inexplicable turnarounds, impossible saves, people who beat the odds and defied the textbooks." Wondering, Dr. Warren, if you would share a story with that, like that, with us, because as you said, there's times where you kind of see how it's going to go and it goes that way. Tell us a story when it just surprised you, didn't go that way.
Well, I think the best one, in my experience, is there was a soldier that I took care of in Iraq who had a roadside or a car bomb detonate close to him, and a bunch of rocks and debris went through his face, basically destroyed both of his eyes, gave him a terrible brain injury. And I operated on him in a tent hospital in Iraq in 2005. And at that time, we, you know, I stabilized, cleaned things up, stopped the bleeding, patched him up, and put him on a plane back to Walter Reed. Didn't expect him to survive, and certainly didn't expect to ever hear from him again. But then 10 years later, I got an email from a hospital chaplain, Army chaplain, I should say, from Fort Riley, Kansas, who said, "You know, Doc, you took care of my wife when we lived in Alabama, and I was now in Kansas. And today we had a speaker come and speak to us, an Army captain who's blind in both eyes, who was saved in Iraq. And it, based on your story and his story, I think you might have taken care of this guy."
Wow.
And so I went to my journal because I kept a detailed record. We didn't have names of most of the soldiers because they came in blown up and their clothes had been cut off and all that. So I went to my journal, and on the date that he was injured, I operated on a guy that exactly the same story. So the backstory to that is that I called the family from Iraq and talked to his wife, Tiffany. The soldier's name is Scotty Smiley. And so back in 2005, had told her what had happened and that we weren't sure he was going to survive and all of that. Well, when this chaplain reconnected us, I called them, and it turned out that Scotty Smiley not only survived, but he became the first active duty officer allowed to come back to duty blind. He went on to have 3 children, climb Mount Rainier, run an Ironman triathlon, get an MBA from Duke University, and now he and his wife both are authors and motivational speakers all over the country. And Lisa and I got to meet them recently on Facebook Live. And so here's an example of somebody, Scotty and Tiffany Smiley. His book, Hope Unseen, by the way, is terrific. Hope Unseen. But that's an example of somebody that the medical facts would have said, this guy's done for. He's never going to survive. But not only did he survive, but he's led this amazing life, and he's inspiring millions of people. And so God does things we don't expect him to do. And I have one 10-year survivor of glioblastoma.
Whoa.
I wrote about in the book. Eli Bailey, the character in the book, is a real person who's alive about 12 years now from a tumor that has a 0% 10-year survivor. So God does a lot of things we don't understand, Susie.
Why do you suppose, amen, wow, what stories. Why do you suppose he survived?
Well, if you want to do science, anatomically his tumor was in the tip of his temporal lobe, which is not connected to the rest of the brain. So I was able to resect the tumor with a large margin, so it got way ahead of it. But even that case, usually that tumor comes back within a year or two. So there, in my opinion, he's a man of faith. He prayed and believed, and his family prayed and believed, and God healed him. Because it certainly wasn't the surgery or the chemotherapy, the radiation, because it never works for anybody else.
Wow. Got this listener said, good friend's husband passed away 2 days after Christmas from glioblastoma. They had an amazing last year traveling and living life. Didn't really hamper their lifestyle till the last month or two. It was amazing to witness their final days. Wow. What do you say to the person, Dr. Warren, who lives in fear when they hear stories of what could happen? I mean, maybe they tend to go to, you know, they catastrophize. I battled a lot of fear over my life, and God's done some great things. But I remember one day God speaking to my heart saying, the enemy is trying to get you to imagine a future that I'm not in. He's trying to get you to catastrophize some of these worst case scenarios, and I'm not there. But if you look back at every trial you've ever been through, my grace has been sufficient for you. I've brought you through. You've been stronger as you come through. And it was like this breakthrough moment for me where I thought, that's exactly what the enemy does with fear. But I'd love for you to speak to it from a surgeon / man of faith perspective. What do you say to the person maybe who does battle perpetual fear because of some of these wretched diseases that you face?
Well, as this cliche, but the motivational speaker Tony Robbins says, emotion follows motion. And that's true. So the first thing is I tell people, fight this thing. Move and you'll feel better. Certainly your outcome will be better if you fight and if you hold on to hope. And fear will tell you no. Fear will always say you're done for, you need to quit, you need to give up. You know, doubt's okay. I've come to learn doubt is all right. Doubt will say, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be all right. I don't know if this is going to work out. I don't know if God's in this or not. But fear will say no. And so when you have fear, you have to fight fear. And it's better, you need to fight harder for your story regardless of what your body is going to do. So if you have a disease that has a terminal prognosis, don't let fear make you quit now, because you still have life to live, no matter what. So the outcome of your story is more important than the current state of your heart, right? You need to fight for it. And so what I've learned is that if you speak possibility into those doubts, when doubt is saying, I don't know, then faith will start telling you yes. Faith might say, hey, I've got terminal cancer, but I need to love on my family. I need to reconnect with my sister that I'm estranged from. I need to make my life mean something while I'm fighting for it. And I think that's how we can find meaning and purpose, and even in suffering, even when the outcome isn't what we might want, is to just fight for faith all the time.
Amen. Fight for faith. That is the fight of faith for all of us. And so I'd like to know, Dr. Warren, as you talked about emerging out of the ashes of your pain, as you're trying to navigate life, trying to carry on after the tragic death of your son, when did you first sense the first glimmers of hope? I mean, when, you know, as you're carrying on, I just love what your daughter said, I can't move on, but I'm going to carry on. So you had to go back to work, your wife, you had to run this business, you had employees counting on you, so you had to show up. When did all of a sudden you feel like, oh, this, I'm not carrying this as heavy. Oh, there's a little bit of a fresh breeze blowing through my soul. When did that happen and how?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I think it was the first time that I was in a position to help somebody else. It was a patient of mine, actually Eli Bailey, the one that turned out to survive glioblastoma, who had a sister who lost a son a few months after we lost ours. And he said, can you talk to my brother-in-law? Because losing his son has killed his faith. Like, he's really in trouble. And I said, what do I know? I mean, I'm not any better off than he is. And he said, well, you've survived it a few months. Now, can you just talk to him and tell him that 4 months from now he can still be alive? And that conversation with that man really made me see, okay, you know what? I don't know how I got through those days, but here I am. I'm alive and I'm working and my business didn't fail and my kids hadn't flunked out of school and my wife didn't leave me. And, somehow it became possible for me to recognize that God had done that work over those 6 months, and helping that other person was what opened that light for me, turned on that light switch for me. So I think once you get to a place where you can use what you're going through to make somebody else better, then I think you'll really start to latch on to hope again.
I wonder at times, Dr. Warren, if we think we have to get to a certain place. I mean, there's times when you're like, I'm not ready to talk about it. But I also think there's times we postpone that, thinking we need to, again, have a good period at the end of the sentence or a nice bow around this thing. Mm-hmm. But you weren't all the way through it. You were still in it. So there is something to be said about when the invitation comes, when God issues the invitation, responding to the invitation. You don't have all the answers, but you have a portion of a story, right?
That's right. I mean, his strength is perfected in our weakness. It's really the best ministry you can have is to show how God is faithful to you, even in your brokenness. Not to try to say, look how good of a face I put on this. Look how great I've done through all this. It's hey, I don't know how I got through that. It had to have been God's help. That's what other people can latch on to.
Wow. One last question for you before we wrap here. What do you know about God now that you didn't know 5-10 years ago?
I know he tells the truth. I know all his promises are true. And I know that he is never gone from you, no matter how dark it seems. Like the darkest place you can be in your life, he's still there. You just need to reach out for him.
Mm. Well, I just praise God that we have doctors like you in the field, serving patients and believing God. And I just want to thank you for the courage to write this book and to talk about it today. We sure appreciate you, sir. God bless you, and thanks for joining us.
Susie, thanks so much. God bless you.
Great conversation. Dr. Lee Warren, everyone, his book is titled I've Seen the End of You, A Neurosurgeon's Look at Faith, Doubt, and the Things We Think We Know. We're going to leave that drawing open for a while since we've got a good 8 copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. And I want to give a shout out to my amazing producers, Kim Sanders and Ryan Mitchell, who make every show better and every day brighter. Appreciate you so much. And I appreciate you, my dear listener. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you found some encouragement here. And we'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Middays with Susie Larson. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And never miss a show.